about a new world in the morning. New world in the morning.
Hello, everyone. I'm Todd Williams. It's April 22nd, 2016. And today I'm embarking on what I hope will be an interesting and informative series of podcasts about the life of my father, Ray Hinsey. My son-in-law Weston's foray into podcasting is what inspired me. A few months ago, he started podcasting relatively short interviews with each of his parents and siblings, mainly to share life experiences and personal insight with his extended family, and I admit, I caught the bug. So, a few weeks ago, I mentioned to my dad that I wanted to interview him when he came to Texas for my daughter Caitlin's wedding in early April, and he agreed to the interview. To prepare myself and him for the interview, I reread his written personal history, the one that he and Mom collaborated on back in 2001 through 2003, and I sent him a series of questions for him to think about in advance. Now, Dad has had a long life. He was born in 1931 and turns 85 in July of this year. When I got to the point in his history when he married my mother in 1969, I had 5 pages of questions, and time was running short, and we were pretty busy preparing for the wedding guests that would be descending upon us in just a few days. So, I sent him those pages of questions and figured that I'd just see where that got us. As it turned out, we only had enough free time during the week he was here in Houston to capture about 3.5 hours of recorded interview. And we had only covered the 5 pages of questions up through 1969. I fully expect to be able to complete the interview in the coming weeks as our schedules allow, even if it happens over the phone or Skype or FaceTime or whatever. Now, I'm not going to make you listen to the 3.5 hours of raw interview. What I am going to do is break our interview down into segments that will range from about 30 to 60 minutes in length. I'll publish those podcasts weekly over the course of a few weeks. Interspersed throughout the interview, I intend on adding my own commentary on some of the things I learned about some of the topics we discussed. For example, in the interview, Dad mentions the Alberta peach, which I believe he alludes received its name from the town of Alberta where he was born and lived until he was about 5 years old. As it turns out, there were peach orchards in Alberta, but the town was actually named after the peach and not the other way around. I researched that topic a bit and interject some commentary about that in the interview, mainly because I thought it was interesting. As far as I can discern, Dad's memory is as sharp as ever. I asked him to delve back in time 60, 70, 80 plus years during this interview, and for the most part, his ability to recall events and names from so long ago was remarkable. So, this series of podcasts will hopefully be entertaining and informative and give you some insight into the life of a man that many people call husband, father, grandpa, great-grandpa, uncle, friend, associate, and so on. I have one final comment. I am not a professional interviewer nor podcaster. I'm actually an engineer, and by nature, engineers are boring and drab. I'm doing this on my home computer by myself using Apple's GarageBand software. Sometimes the audio and production quality isn't perfect, and I make mistakes in the interview process. I'm kind of learning as I go here. So when you hear these imperfections, please be kind. It's a lot harder than you think. If you have comments about any of the content of the interview, please contact me and share it with me. I'd love to hear your insights and thoughts. With that said, I hope you enjoy this series of podcasts, and now, my interview with my father, Ray Hinsey.
That's my Diet Coke opening up, Dad. Couldn't wait. He's already got his
open. I opened a half drink. These cans aren't very big. That's where I have
get a 2-liter bottle.
That's where I have a 2-liter bottle.
It is nice that you can pour whatever
I like about you want. I like about a can and a half. Yeah.
Okay, so it's April 7th, 2016. Caitlin's wedding is in 2 days, so you're in town.
I'm in town, right.
Staying with Jen Lynn, Lorna's daughter. So, I mean, just kind of give us just a synopsis of where you came from, when you were born.
Okay, I was born a child of the Depression.
1931,
yeah, just getting into it. And I have no real childhood memories.
None? I mean, up until when?
About six.
Okay.
5 or 6 years of age. And went to counseling, a psychiatrist, your mother and I, and he said something traumatic happened, and I blocked them all out.
Really?
Yeah, that's what he said. And I said,
do you
well,
know
I,
what
and I said, no. And he said, in a child, it really doesn't have to be traumatic. It's at the time you perceived it was traumatic. And the psychiatrist said, if you want, I can hypnotize you and we'll find out. But he said, it could be very trivial. But at your age, it was, you know.
he thought, or I guess he knew that hypnosis, he could get
yeah, he could get it out of me. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So the Depression hits 1929.
1929, yeah.
Your parents are in Alberta.
Alberta, were isolated out on a farm.
And how many other people are out in Alberta at this time?
I don't know, but...
Your dad was like a bishop.
He was bishop of the ward there, but the closest house was maybe half a mile.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and did you know your neighbors at all?
Well, yeah.
Half a mile?
Half a mile. You knew them, saw them in church or...
Whatever.
Whatever.
And your dad was a farmer?
Was a farmer. Everybody was a farmer.
And yeah. What did he farm?
Well, the biggest thing, well, hay and grain.
For?
Cows. And you separated...
To sell them?
Sell them. Well, you sold the cream. You would take the cream and 5 gallons of cream. You had a cream separator. You turned the handle.
So, I mean, I'm a little ignorant when it comes to cow milk processing, but...
By hand.
You milked the cow by hand.
Yeah, we had no power.
And so you had a bunch of cows?
Yeah.
How many cows?
I don't remember how many cows, but we always had a herd of cows.
Okay.
And
you had to milk them twice a day, right?
Had to be milked. And I was always too young to get in the milking.
So all your brothers and sisters?
I don't know. No, I don't think the sisters ever milked.
It was a... Boy thing.
Boys. The boys and dad would milk, yeah.
So by hand
into a bucket.
Bucket and dump the bucket into a vat or something.
Run it through a strainer.
Okay. To get the particles out.
To get the particles out, the big chunks, yeah.
And then
you ran it through a cream separator. You poured the
like
milk.
A centrifuge?
Centrifuge, and you turned the handle, and I don't know what the process was. But
then that would separate the cream.
Cream from the milk, yeah. They called it the blue milk.
And you sold the cream.
And you sold the cream. You would take it to the store up on the main street up there in Alberta, and then there'd be a truck come along and take it away to the creamery, and then, yeah.
I did not know that.
You didn't know that?
I thought he raised crops out there.
Well, you did. It was funny.
Was there enough water out there?
Yeah.
Rain, it was...
No, irrigation.
It was all canals and
it
irrigation?
It was canal, yeah. Do you know where the Mona Reservoir is?
No.
Just before you get to Nephi, there is a reservoir.
Nephi?
Yeah.
That's like
going south,
isn't it?
Yes, going south to Nephi, there's a reservoir. And that collected the water. And then Goshen was a natural flow. Alberta, they had to run it through a flume, raise it up gradually over the mountain. And I remember always worrying that the flume was going to go out right in the middle of the...
Watering time.
Watering time, yeah.
And hay for cattle.
Cattle, yeah. And you
did, sold it.
No, you didn't sell it.
You kept it.
You kept it.
Okay, so the hay was basically to feed the cows.
To feed the cows and the horses.
So his cash crop was cream.
Cream, yeah. And I don't know if they sold grain. I don't remember.
I guess grain.
Yeah. So.
But that was mainly grain, hay and grain for cows, so basically.
Yeah.
And the horses.
And of course, you raised a garden and you canned and...
Did he own your house?
I don't think so, no. And then 2 weeks before I was born, they tell me it burned down to the ground.
Okay, so you never lived in that house.
Never lived in that house. I was born on the neighbor's kitchen table. And when...
This is the neighbor that was a half a mile away?
Half a mile away, yeah.
Okay. So I wonder how that would have been for your parents. She's 8.5 months pregnant.
Yeah,
your mom
and it burned.
And the house burns down.
The house burns down.
And so... They must have went to stay with the neighbors.
I don't remember. Or pitched a tent. But anyway, when my mother was a little girl in Salt Lake, Redmond Moving and Storage was her buddy.
Okay.
They grew up together, and when he read in the paper, it got in the paper about
the house burned down
with all the kids. He sent a whole van down of unclaimed furniture and that, so they kind of always joke they ended up with better furniture.
If I'd have known that, I would have burned it down sooner.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That's kind of interesting.
They didn't know the cause in the summer, because it was so hot, they'd move the cook stove out in the backyard because you had to build a fire to cook, and there was no electricity. And so the common blame, you blamed the mice in the matchbox. Where we lived, Alberta was originally founded as a non-Mormon community. And they always kind of suspected there was some really anti-Mormon and that it might have been arson.
Okay, let me just jump in here and make a few comments about the people in Alberta at this time. Alberta was settled by outsiders, apparently from Nebraska, who had come to Utah around the year 1900 with the promise that they could live in Utah without mixing with the Mormons. So it was not your typical Utah town. When a Mormon family moved in and got settled, there was some animosity and some feelings of hostility by the original settlers. As I'll discuss later, these feelings of animosity and hostility later disappeared as interactions between the Mormons and non-Mormon settlers increased, and as the population dynamics shifted to Mormons being the majority component of that population. But during this period of time, there was still some hostility directed at the Mormon settlers, like the Hinsies.
The Alberta was founded to raise peaches. The Alberta peach, that's where it got its name.
I've never even heard of the Alberta peach.
Oh, that's one of the early species of peaches.
Okay, let me just jump in here again and clarify the record and tell you the story about the Alberta peach. Dad says, the Alberta peach, that's where it got its name, which seems to indicate that the peach got its name from the town of Alberta. It turns out that the Alberta peach originally came from a Georgia peach orchard owned by a man many consider the father of the southern peach industry, Samuel H. Rumpf. And it's an interesting story. In 1857, a Mr. I.C. Plant sent an assortment of budded peach trees to Samuel's grandfather, Colonel Lewis Rumpf, who owned an orchard near Marshallville, Georgia, which is about 35 miles southwest of Macon, Georgia. The trees are planted in the family orchard and grew to be large and prolific, according to an article I read from the University of Georgia College of Agricultural and Environmental Sciences. Some seeds from one of these peach trees, a variety called the Chinese Kling, which bore particularly beautiful fruit, were saved by Samuel's grandmother and given to her daughter and planted in 1870. Samuel, who developed a love of horticulture as a teen, had begun managing his own plantation on a parcel of land originally owned by his grandfather and was experimenting with peach varieties. In 1875, a former classmate of Samuel's wife, a Mrs. L.E. Ville, was visiting, and Samuel was exhibiting to her different specimens of peaches when he finally pulls out this, quote, clear-seeded peach with yellow flesh and a crimson blush on its cheek, close quote. Mrs. Ville asked what its name was, and Samuel replied, "It has no name. It is my origination. I want you to name it." Whereupon Mrs. Ville said, "Well, let's honor your wife and call it for her. You'll never have anything to surpass it on this continent. Alberta is its name." The peach was so firm that a shipment from Georgia to New York City was shipped uniced and arrived in good condition and was sold for $15 a bushel, which was described by this article as a fancy price. The community of Alberta was originally established in 1895 and named Mount Nebo after the nearby mountain peak. A man named Ernest Rognan planted Alberta peach orchards there. There was a water failure in 1901, which forced most of the early settlers to move away, And in 1907, a Mr. Matthew B. Whitney, of New York native, purchased the place and renamed it Alberta after the peach. Records indicate that the name was given with the hopes of attracting settlers. So, in short, the town of Alberta got its name from the peach and not the other way around.
And they had a lot of orchards. And in the 20s, I guess there was a drought, and the orchards died. And a lot of...
Grandma and Grandpa had lived in Alberta previous, hadn't they?
No.
Okay, that was someplace else.
They'd lived a lot of places.
They lived in a tent.
Yeah.
And that didn't work out for them, and so they moved away. And they
lived
came
in.
Back.
They lived in Hinckley for a while.
Okay.
Down by Delta. I don't know. That was all before I was born.
Okay, I need to jump in here again to clarify some basic facts. Dad's brother Alan wrote a family history outline of his and Dad's parents, of which I have a copy. According to that outline, in the spring of 1915, Dad's parents, Henry Harriman and Ethel Irene Sears Hintze, did indeed move to Hinckley, Utah, where a new agricultural tract of the lower Sevier River opened up. And they did indeed live in a tent, so I wasn't just making stuff up. I knew I had read this information before. They settled northeast of town and considered themselves well off because, well, their tent was new. And that tent was their home for the next year and a half. By fall, Henry had built a board floor and 30-inch sidewalls to stabilize the tent against the winds and to raise the floor above the mud. Aunt Flora, Henry's sister, and Uncle Roy Sears, Irene's brother, lived in the tent next door. But they gave up before the first year was over and went back to Salt Lake City. So Henry and Irene made use of their tent to have a little storage room to keep some of their supplies out of the sun and rain. The second year, the family moved into town where Henry farmed some already drained land. Henry and Irene decided to abandon farming altogether in Hinckley in the fall of 1918. And so they sold all of their possessions and bought clothes and train tickets back to Salt Lake City. During 1919, Henry farmed the Hintze property in Holiday. Sometime in 1920, he took a job as a watermaster in Metropolis, Nevada. And then in 1921, Henry took his oldest son and Dad's oldest brother, Harold, with him and moved by railroad boxcar with horses, cattle, lumber, and supplies to Alberta, Utah. Henry had to accompany the livestock during the trip to see that they got water and to keep them calm during the trip. He and Harold unloaded their belongings on a railroad siding north of Alberta and drove the animals south about 2 miles past the store and schoolhouse to a farm which Henry had leased on shares. In a grove of trees, they pitched their tent and began the work of assembling a frame house, which they had brought with them. When the house was finished enough to accommodate the rest of the family, they came to Alberta by automobile. When Henry and Harold spent their first Sunday there, they attended the only Sunday service in town. It was a community church conducted by a Protestant minister from Provo. Henry had inquired earlier if they would be welcome to attend, and after some consideration, they were invited to attend the next service. Henry instructed Harold, under no circumstances, to comment on anything he saw or heard that he didn't understand. This was real wisdom on Henry's part. While the family did experience some persecution at times, they followed their father's advice of keeping mum and eventually the strangeness between the original settlers and the Mormon family began to wear away. They were spoken to outside of church services and even invited to attend a town social. Before the summer was over, a new Mormon family, the Penrods, moved into the southern part of the valley called Verda. Henry and Brother Penrod found that the family living in the Company Ranch was an inactive Mormon who could be activated, so they obtained permission to organize the Verda branch for the three families. The Hintze family withdrew from attending the Protestant church and started their own services 3 miles south of Alberta. The Company House became their place of worship. Other families, Mormon and non-Mormon, came in the next year or so. However, because there were more non-Mormons, the schoolteacher had to be a Protestant to preserve the isolation demanded by the earlier settlers. School was at Alberta, and all seven grades were in one room with one teacher. A student simply moved over a row each year. With the growth of the Verde branch and the increase of settlers in the south end of the valley, the school board set up a school in Verde with a Mormon teacher. This left the Protestants to hold their own school in Alberta. Mormon families, usually being more prolific than their Protestant counterparts, soon became the dominant group, and finally a combined school was formed with a new schoolhouse to be built between Alberta and Verde. It was to be a modern school with two rooms instead of one and two teachers. It had taken a long time and much patience to get the Protestant group to abandon their isolation, but their decline in numbers, coupled with their loss of majority status, permitted the new school to be built. Verde soon disappeared as a community, and the Alberta school became the center of Mormon church activities and the only school in the valley. The Protestants still held their own Sunday services in the abandoned schoolhouse in the north part of town. According to Allen, Alberta is the site of most of the family's fondest memories.
So, to kind of get back to your story, the Depression hits in 29.
29.
Were your parents directly affected by that?
Well,
I mean, people still needed cream and milk.
The thing is, back in those days, you never had any money.
Ever,
hardly. It was a barter economy.
Yeah.
And you self-sufficient. They gathered firewood for the winter. You know.
So the boys and dad would just go up, and grandpa would just go up into the hills.
Cut wood, and bring it down for the winter. They'd store the hay for the cows. We had pigs and chickens, and so.
So did you eat a lot of fresh eggs?
Lot of eggs and a lot of chicken, because there was no refrigeration. So a chicken you eat it. Yeah, and you eat it in one meal. And it was always nice after the first frost, because then they'd butcher some animals, and then we could have pork and beef.
And they'd put the pork and the beef in a cold house?
And it had what they call a root cellar or a spring house.
Underground.
Underground, yeah. And it would be a little cool. And so we could eat, then we could have meat. But you didn't have...
But how long does meat... I guess it's frozen. Because unless you freeze meat, it'll go bad just sitting in the refrigerator. I guess it's cold enough, it's frozen.
It's cold. No, it wasn't frozen. Then meat will keep forever. Heard of the term well hung? It softens. It does. But it will keep for quite a while. And then they actually bottled it. They would cut little like steak things and cook them and seal them in a bottle just like you did anything else. And they would cure bacon and ham that was all.
And curing is a
salt process. Salt and smoke. Yeah.
Yeah. So you had a lot of smoked.
Bacon and stuff you could eat. Yeah. But see, we have electricity, and I remember.
So it was candlelight.
Candlelight or kerosene
lanterns.
Yeah.
Lanterns.
Yeah, kerosene lanterns, and.
Where'd you get your kerosene?
You'd buy it from gallon the store, and then they had what was it, the Coleman type where you could pump up with the pressure. Then that really gave you good light.
Okay.
Hey, but there was no TV, no radio. When it got dark, you went to bed.
Because it gets dark early.
Yeah. But you got up early also.
I don't know how much farming you do in the wintertime. I guess a lot still, but not growing things, but milking cows.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we did do have never the cast crop. We'd raise turkeys.
Oh, turkeys.
Yeah, we'd have a flock of turkey, because I have a memory of riding me on the horse behind Brother Gene, and they'd make piles of tumbleweeds and about dusk light them to scare the coyotes away out of the...
Every day.
Every night, yeah, out of the turkey flock, yeah.
So was it just an open kind of a range?
Yeah, it was an open range. They were free-range turkeys, yeah.
Well, how do you
they'll stay in a herd.
They will?
Oh, yeah, they'll stay
in a herd. And you could herd them, how did you catch them?
I don't know, I don't remember.
But you could herd them, and you herded them with horses?
No, they...
I don't remember them being
raised. They were just kind of free-range out, and they'd feed them, and they'd stay around the feeders, feeding water.
And then you capture them and kill them, huh?
Yeah, well, the processing plant was over in Moroni, which wasn't too far away.
Okay.
Yeah.
So did you have, like, the rooster turkey?
Yeah, the big rooster in the yard, and that, oh, we had those mean roosters. You get mean.
I can imagine.
They come attack you when you're little kids. And we had an outhouse, and that was sometimes kind of a scary walk out.
Where's Mr. Turkey?
You have to fight that rooster off, yeah.
When did your parents move away from Alberta?
When I was five.
Okay, so any memories you have of Alberta?
Very few.
Very few.
Yeah.
But you do have some, though.
I had some of throwing the match in the tumbleweeds to scare the coyotes away.
So you were the youngest of 11.
Uh-huh.
Were there any stillborns or miscarriages?
No, I had one die. An older brother, about 9 months or something, got pneumonia.
Okay.
The nearest doctor was about 30 miles away in Payson.
So you practiced medicine?
Farm medicine, yeah.
And your mom was good at taking care of...
And when you ate healthy, yeah.
And you worked?
Yeah.
And a lot of fresh air, I would imagine.
Constantly.
So you basically outside all the time. I imagine it's hot inside the house.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, they designed houses back then to you'd open the windows and get airflow.
Yeah. And then you also got mosquitoes. Yeah.
So how far is Utah Lake from where you're at?
Utah Lake then, Goshen is this tip.
It was a ways.
Oh, yeah, it was a ways.
I remember driving out there. You drive on the west side of Utah Lake along that Roller coaster road.
Now, for years, all through my teenage years, that's still a gravel road. We'd go out there and shoot rabbits, sit on the fenders. Cars used to have fenders and headlights, and you'd put a leg around a headlight and shoot rabbits off that. So,
what did you do for fun then, around the house or around the farm? Or
You made your own fun. Yeah. They used to put a broomstick through a wash tub, through the handles of a wash tub. And
you're talking, the wash tub is just like an oversized bucket, right?
Yeah, well, they're big.
Yeah.
I mean, they're big enough to get in and take a bath in. And you'd put a broomstick through it and then balance it on two chairs. And so the trick was to try to sit in that and
swing
and balance without falling out. bath night, Saturday night, they'd fill that tub. And
you were lucky because
women and kids were first. I know always first, and I can always remember. Said he's peeing in it.
So I mean, is that kind of the typical? You'd fill it full of clean hot water,
and then
you'd bathe outside of it, and then you could soak in it.
You climbed right in and soaked
all the dirt and soap
and everything. Yeah, and the men were last. Dad was always last, and that water, was
murky.
Yeah. Yeah. But of course, you only did it.
Did you rinse in that water too?
Yeah, that was
other
it.
Water?
No, I don't remember you having other water.
Where did you get water?
You heated. Oh, we had a well.
You had a well on the property.
It was called a cistern. They'd run irrigation water into it and went way down. Then you had the bucket on the rope.
So you literally had to reel a bucket out of water.
And then we drank it, and they always joked. They had some cheesecloth. You strained it to get the wigglers out before you...
Actual bugs?
Actual bugs, yeah.
In the water. And you drink it just like that?
Untreated, anything.
Anything.
You had a good... You developed good immune systems.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
But that's just the way life was.
Well, yeah.
Didn't know any different.
Didn't
right?
know, not a bit of difference.
So how deep do you think?
I don't remember, but it was 20 or 30 feet down because the rope was long.
Yeah. And it's kind of amazing how you would dig.
They'd line it with rock.
Yeah. So you'd have to get down in there, right?
Yeah, you'd have to, yeah.
And probably by bucket. You probably built the frame and the bucket at a time. You'd shovel it and lift the dirt out and lower the rock down.
You didn't waste water.
No, I can imagine you did not waste water.
Seeing there's no refrigeration.
Yeah. So you had when you had fruit, it was fresh fruit?
It was fresh fruit or bottled.
Or bottled.
In the season, you bottled the fruit.
So your mom got really good at bottling?
Everybody bottled. That was it, yeah.
Yeah.
And then we moved to Alberta, from Alberta to Taylorsville, 48 South.
You were five.
I was about five, yeah. And the move was horse and wagon.
Really?
Yes.
Didn't have a car.
Well, we had a car, but
not a, something that
not a truck or anything like that.
Yeah, you couldn't borrow a truck?
Well, I don't remember, but I know, well, we had all the farm equipment. And
so what did they do with all the farm equipment?
We farmed. We came to a little farm there in Taylorsville.
Okay, so you took it with you.
Took it with us. What?
And when you say farm equipment, you're talking plows?
Yeah, but it was all horse-drawn.
Okay.
Yeah. It was all horse-drawn, mowers and stuff like that.
What does a horse-drawn mower look like? I don't even think I know what that looks like.
It had wheels with cogs and gears that made the cutter bar go back and forth.
Okay.
You know, a hedge cutter?
Yeah.
Well, they had a big one that dropped out on the ground. And
that's how it cut?
That's how it would cut the hay.
Okay. But the wheels had spikes on them or whatever?
Yeah, the wheels had
good traction.
Good traction. And the inside of the wheel had gears that transferred down, yeah.
Yeah. I bet you probably operated one of those as you
were older. When we got in Taylorsville, I could run the mower. I could never run the rake because I never was big enough to trip that sucker. It was a trip rake, and you'd pull it behind you on the hay, and then you'd hit the levers, and it'd dump it, try to dump it in a windrow, so... So you didn't bale it, you hauled it loose.
Okay. So you cut it and let it dry.
Let it dry, yeah.
And then you would
rake it.
With a pitchfork or something?
No, it was a machine.
It was an automated machine?
It was a
picking up off the ground?
Picking up off, just like a rake with big torrents that came down and it'd go along. And then when you'd get a bunch in there, then you would trip it and it would dump it. In a windrow.
Was it spring loaded?
Yeah, no, it wasn't spring loaded.
It was just the weight of your body.
Weight of your body and a lever, you would.
Okay, and it would put it where?
You know what a windrow looks like? I mean, you'd drag it along and then you'd dump it. Then the next time you'd dump it the same place. So
I mean, it's just a big pile,
Long row of loose hay. Yeah.
Yeah, and you left it like that?
Then you would come along and pile it. You would make it in little piles that you could pick up with a pitchfork and throw on the
Wagon.
And
it was a horse-drawn wagon.
Horse-drawn wagon. Yeah, everything was horse-drawn.
You didn't have oxen?
No, it was all horses.
No cows, no nothing like that?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. You would do that once a season or once or twice a season?
If you were lucky, you'd get three crops. You always got two.
So you'd start planting in March?
Well, hay, alfalfa regenerates. It's like your lawn.
So it goes dormant in the winter.
It goes dormant in the winter.
And then sometime in the spring.
Spring, it depends on the amount of rain and
sunshine. Else.
Yeah.
And then you would, it would get a certain height or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd
cut it. I don't remember. Like
cutting the grass? But
it would start to bloom. That was when it was time to cut it.
Right as it started to bloom?
Right as it started to bloom, if I remember.
And then you'd cut it.
The first crop.
And that's, you're talking what, two couple of months between
Well,
crops?
Again, depended on the water.
All the factors.
All the factors that went in. The first crop was always the best. It got the longest in the spring and the highest. And hay, the value was in the leaves, not the stems.
Really?
Yeah, that's where the food value is. So you wanted the leafy things.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they would come and grade your crop? And say this is green.
No, the farmer knew then the second crop wasn't quite, and then if you got a third crop, it wasn't very big at all.
It's good at all, huh?
Yeah.
And is that because of water?
Water and the growing season, the heat, yeah.
All right.
So,
I mean, in between crops, then what did you do?
Oh, you had a garden to weed.
Okay, so it was pretty much.
They're always on a farm.
So your dad would get up. I mean, did you have cows in Taylorsville?
Yeah.
You did.
Oh yeah, we had cows.
Like a herd of cows.
Always. Well, I can't remember the number, but we always had three or four. You know, cows have to go dry,
right?
And then they
have to have a calf.
Have to have a calf, so they'd time it so some were dry, some were having a calf, and some were milking.
Right. And your dad was raised on a dairy farm. Right?
When they were kids on holiday, yeah.
That's what they did out there.
But see, I never knew that. I never knew grandparents that were all dead before I came along.
Right. But I mean, you think that's what your dad got is?
Well, hey, that was, everybody kept cows. Nobody went.
Sold the cream?
And sold the cream. Or kept them for their own. We used to have cream. Mother would make butter, milk, cottage cheese. Yeah, the whole thing. They'd make everything.
Okay. Okay. So that was that basically just for living or was
subsistence
that,
living? Yeah.
Okay. So that wasn't.
I remember.
That wasn't a cash mother, income. I mean, a major income source.
Mother would they'd like she made nice butter, so she had a little mold and a little paper she could put them around that had Irene's sweet butter. I think that's what
is
it
is. That right?
Yeah.
So she should sell it?
Sell it to barter it or trade it. I don't. You never had any money, Todd. Good yeah. night. Yeah. I remember agonizing for hours over how to spend a nickel. I mean,
well, that was back when a nickel was a lot of money.
Well, you could have a candy bar, you could have a soft drink, or you could have an ice cream. You could have one of the three. Yeah. Yeah. When I first started dating Todd, $2 was yeah, $2. She was high cotton to go on a date. Yeah.
Well, a movie was what, a quarter?
Quarter, 20 cents. Yeah, 50. Hamburgers were 15 cents. Yeah.
I've got to leave old Durham town. I've got to leave old Durham town. I've got to leave.
So, there you have it. Well, at least the first part of it, anyway. In the next episode, we'll talk about brothers and sisters, parents and friends, aunts and uncles. We'll talk about the war and rationing. We'll be introduced to a man named Tom Imlay, who owned a dog kennel next to Dad's house, and of whom Dad would say,
"I would have been better off in life without ever meeting him."
But many of the good things that happened to Dad later in life happened because of his knowledge and experience with dogs, and we have to credit Tom Imlay for at least part of that. We'll learn about two of Dad's early loves, Donna Howlett and Janice King, and much, much more. So stay tuned as I continue my interview with my father, Ray Hinsey.
Down the line and they would leave. I've got to leave old Durham town. I've got to leave old Durham town. I've got to leave old Durham town. And that leaving's gonna get me down. Last week, Mama passed away. Goodbye, son, was all she said. There's no call for me to stay, so I'm leaving. Leaving, 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 leaving free. I've gotta leave.